Hello, and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon recording from her virtual studio in downtown Nicosia. And with me, all the way from Utah, the USA, I have Katima Emami. Welcome, Katima.
Hi, nice to meet you. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity this time to speaking with you right now. And I'm really grateful from you. Thank you so much.
Just to introduce you to the listeners, Katima has an MA in sociology as well as a PhD in political science. And she currently works for the IRC, which is the International Red Cross. But she's also done a lot of research on women empowerment, the lives of refugees, peace negotiations. So she's got quite a rich CV and something that everything she's done is something I'm interested in. So, Katima, should we start with? Because I think when we talk about refugees, I think we forget that all refugees are not the same and their challenges are not the same. And a lot has to do with gender. So, do you want to start? Do you want to tell us, you know, firsthand what it means to be an Afghan woman in refu in that is a refugee? Should we start from that?
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, being refugee is it's not an easy thing because I am by myself. I'm a refugee, and coming in the US was really difficult for me because even though I know the language and I'm educated and I just got here, I didn't know the culture, the system, and the environment and the people around me. I was really like for the first time when I came here, I was in the camp. Like I was in the camp for 3 months in New Jersey for this camp. But that was really hard for me. I was thinking like how I'm going to make my life in the US, how I'm going to find a job being educated. And I didn't want to work with any other places like to work in Walmart or some other place because I'm educated. I want the best for women to those who are like educated. I want them to work in academic area and I wanted to grow especially in my field.
So how did when we
That
when did you
was
actually leave when did you leave Afghanistan?
I left Afghanistan in August 2021, and I came to Qatar. I got into Qatar, and then I was living in the camp for 3 months, and then I got in the U.S. in New Jersey camp for more other 3 months, and then for all of these problems, challenges that I was facing in Qatar or New Jersey camp as a refugee because. Since I got in the US, I was living in the camp and the people, especially people were, there were lots of different kinds of people. They were educated, they were not educated, and they were behaving same with all the people. Like they were not understanding who is educated and who has been like working hard for the people. So it was just kind of like challenging understanding the people, and we were not allowed to go out of the camp and we were staying and we were having like same food, and there was challenging of health issues as because there were so much people, and it was really hard for them to cover all the peoples. And then personally, I suffer a lot because we were living in one room of 7 people, like for 3 months, and it was so cold, and it was really hard to. We didn't have bed; we were sleeping on the floor for, and we were getting flu and sick, and until our day. Appointment comes, so we were suffering a lot from pain and lots of things. So it has been, it's not only for us, it's for other people too. And then luckily we got in the US and then we came here. So the IRC, the International Rescue Committee, has picked up our case. And we were living in hotel for 7 months because it was really hard for us to find a house. We didn't have a credit card or credit building
Yes,
score. And
you don't
then
have a credit score in the bank, so they don't give you money.
They were not giving us the house, and because my dad was really sick and he was not able to walk properly, and I was facing hard times to find a house which does not have the stairs and can manage to get him in the house, and I was struggling to find a house in 7 months. And the IRC is still, I'm grateful from them because they helped us a lot and they were finding the houses. But they also told us that if you could see a house nearby you, like which you like and you want to live in, so just let us know. We will help you. Or you can just talk with the landlord or the property management. And to be honest, when I was talking with them, and for the first time when I was talking, yeah, we are this kind, this, I have this seven member of the family, like this, like that. And they were saying, okay, where are we from? Then I was saying, I'm from Afghanistan. And he's, oh, you're refugee. Without saying anything, they just end up the call, like in the call, and they were not even listening to us, not giving us the chance to talk with them, to explain ourselves. Like I was not even I wanted to express myself that I'm the one that is still I'm working with the IRC, and I will assure you that I will do everything by myself. But it takes time to build a credit, and it was really hard for me to know this kind of situation, the system. So until I get used to it, I have suffered a lot.
Tell
And
me a
then
little bit about the IRC that you work for.
IRC is International Rescue Committee. They work for all the refugees around the world. They were working, they're helping in terms of their education, health, housing. We have also one another part that they work for the people who are willing to work at the farms. So we are just helping them and support them in terms of all the things that they are in need. And if they want to build up a farm businesses, so we are just teaching them and having them enroll in our classes to farm, just to make them feel independent. And in the future, if we are not there for them, so they can be self-sufficient, that they can help themselves. So it's all like the main goal of IRC is just to make a client or the people just to be independent and stand by their feet and can work for just them.
I think that's so important because when you're a refugee, the fact that you're not independent, the fact that you don't know the system or the space that you've had to move to is very disempowering. So if you've got someone that can give you a bit of help in the beginning, there's nothing better because you don't want to have help forever. You want to be able to stand on your own two feet. You want to have control of your own life going forward. So it's very important. How long have you been working for the IRC?
I have been working with IRS since I came into Utah in 2021. I was just jobless for 3 months, and then after that, I got the job. The IRC, because this the good thing about me, because I had the experience about working in Afghanistan and having experience with the international organizations, and because I'm the refugee, so I'm from background refugee background, so they were interested in me just to work with them and help with the refugees, because it was so many people coming, ongoing, coming, and it was just me and helping them and refer them, because I know how being a refugee feels like, how to say, like kind of like hopeful, just to sometimes like you feel hopeless, hopeful. It's different kind of emotions, because for me, because I know the language, I can just talk with the people, and there's a word we can say, if you don't speak, you will not gain.
Exactly.
So at least I was able to work and get the things that I wanted for myself, but for other people, it was really hard for them, because they were not illiterate, they didn't know the system, and they were not even able to speak the language, and they were suffering.
The most
And
important thing is to speak the language of the place you've landed in.
yeah, that's true. And then helping them, sometimes they was having the issues with the transportation, because they didn't know how to take the buses, take the cars, and how to go. And sometimes they were having health issues because of the appointments, because of the interpretation. Sometimes we were some kind of, because there's a we speak Persian, but some interpreters, we were when we were calling, they were Iranian languages, and they were not able to understand those languages. And
How many you as an Afghan, you speak Farsi?
I speak multiple languages. I speak English, I speak Pashto, I speak my language, Persian, Dari, I speak Hindi, I speak Urdu.
Okay.
I
So
speak multiple languages.
tell me, you as a refugee, how does it feel to be a refugee? What does it feel like to be a refugee? Because did you leave Afghanistan on the 15th of August, the day Kabul fell, or did you wait a bit before you got taken, moved to Qatar?
To be honest, I had never have this kind of like image that I will be a refugee in future, and I had to leave my homeland like this. I remember the day that when I was working in the office, and then I heard my sister. She called me and she said, "Khatima, just leave the office." And I was saying, "What happening? What's going on?" She was saying, "Just leave the office," because my dad he has done politics, and he was a politician, so that's why we were afraid of like. And she was also supporting us to be to support the women and go against the Taliban view. And they were just supporting. They were saying, my dad was saying, "You are the woman. You are not, apart from the boy. Whatever boys can do or men can do, you can also do the same thing that he wanted." He was always supporting us. He was always like giving the feeling of, being a woman.
Equal, yes.
Equal and have received all the equalities that everybody's enjoying. And so my sister, she said, "Leave the office." And then when I left the office, I didn't see that kind of chaos that in my life that I have never ever seen that kind of chaos. People were just running and going.
You're talking about the 15th of August,
Yes, 15th of
2021.
August. Yeah, 15th of August. And it was really scary for me because there was no cars. Everybody was walking on the street. And when I get to my home, got to my home, I was just locking myself because I was afraid of, Taliban coming to me and taking me, or maybe because I know that when I was kid, I didn't remember so much about the Taliban capture in 1992, but I remember that my dad was struggling saving us because I was kid and he was saving us our lives and taking care of us. But right now I was thinking like, my dad is sick. How can I taking care of him? How can I hide him from the Taliban? How can I carry? Because he was admitted in hospital at that time. He was in emergency room, and then we had to call the hospital. We had to have him back at home. We say that instead of dying by their hands, so it's good to die at home, like with dignity, with respect. And to be honest, I was having this kind of thinking, like my life is finished, I'm nothing. I was completely shattered, and I was really hopeless because I was the one telling my dad that you're not the only person that you help for the people or for your daughters. I just want to be you. I just want to learn you. I want to work for the people. It's not only women. I want to work for everybody, for youth, for child, for women, for myself. I want to be a symbol for them. But when the day the Taliban captured Afghanistan, I was really hopeless because I was working really, really hard. I was teaching in different universities. I was working with the youth people, with the community, because I did my master's in sociology. So I wanted to be in society, learn from them.
And
And
you
then
also knew, so you knew from one day to the next, everything changed.
everything
And
is
you
changed.
all knew, and you all realized that the change was going to be big, except for the international community who put
That's
faith in
true.
the
I
Taliban.
have never imagined this kind of life. And then we don't deserve this kind of life, to be honest. Nobody, no woman deserve, because since the Karzai, our president, came in Afghanistan, the women, they has grown a lot. They were working hard. They received education a lot, and everybody had the wish that I had in my life to just to work for myself, for the people, and for the women. But unfortunately, everything was shattered, and I was really hopeless. It's not just me. Like me, there are 1,000 women that they are feeling the same way that I felt. And to be honest, I'm the lucky that I got the chance to be evacuated from Afghanistan. But what about others that do those are still remained in Afghanistan? They still were.
When did they evacuate you? When were you evacuated? The
Well,
same day.
no, not the same day, but it was just like 4 to 5 days later of that day.
Now, I agree with you. You feel glad to be out, but you think, what about those women and those people that stayed behind and didn't have a choice? Some had a choice and stayed, and some didn't have a choice and had to stay, and they are suffering now. And when you went to Qatar,
There's
tell me what.
also
Tell me.
To be honest, about the woman, I feel sad. It's not just me. I feel everybody me. They are all me. And if I, to be honest, I'm really sometimes I when I'm here, when I'm receiving the benefits or the services here, I still feel about those people, about those women that they are like out of the education. They are not allowed to go to education. They are not allowed to work. They are not allowed to practice what they deserve to practice. And this is, to be honest, this is not fair for women. To, so, sorry, I'm
That's
feeling bad because I do see my friends, my colleagues, they're still suffering. They're in deep depression. You know, they have the heart. We have hopes. Everybody hopes. It's
that's a
why.
terrible feeling to know that you cannot be the best you can be because someone else is making a
But
decision for
still,
you.
I promise that if I cannot do anything for them, at least I can raise their voice from the social media, from the people that I can just go through. I'm always going, I'm always asking, please help those people, please help. At least you can have interviews, at least you can talk with social media, with the news, everybody, so we can raise our rights. As long as I'm alive, I will fight for them. I will fight for
But I
the
have
rights
to
of
tell you,
diverse.
Hatama, is that that's one of the reasons I started my podcast, is because I'm lucky enough to have a voice. So as long as I can speak, or as long as I can provide a space for women to speak, I'm here and I'll do it. I mean, I do this as a volunteer, but
Thank you so much. So we are really appreciating that you really, really like sending our voices to all over the world, not only just here. Gulkum.
No, but to
Thanks
me,
for you.
no worries. But to me, it's very important. And I've got a tattoo on my arm for the symbol of gratitude because I'm very grateful to have been born into a white family, an educated family, if was middle class family, to parents that even though I'm the diaspora, and technically they should be conservative, they weren't. Even though my brother is the firstborn and I'm the lastborn, education was never in question. So I'm very grateful for the fact that I had a lot of advantages that others don't have. In fact, I went to a conference in the Maldives, and as we were going to the airport to leave the conference, I was in the checkpoint checking in with passport control with two Afghan women, and the person at the chair at the passport control saw my EU passport, saw my white skin. It didn't even check anything else, and I went through 2 minutes. My friend behind
And
me,
you just reminded
that she was Afghan. She had an Afghan and and he had her there for half an hour. And I thought that only the fact that I've got white skin and I've got an EU passport means I'm okay, and it shouldn't be like that. So tell me the story I
it's
reminded you of.
so the story that I just remember. So I was going to I don't want to name the office. But I was going to some offices always for my client just to help them get their services or help them just because they didn't know the language or they didn't know how to follow the applications on those things. I was always going like wearing my hair good and wearing makeup and going like this all the time. Because we have a precious day, it's called like Ramadan. We have Ramadan that we are fasting. And because of the respect of the Ramadan month, I had to wear my hijab, my cover. And then I went to that office again because I was wearing the cover. They stopped me and believe me, they just checked me really deeply. Like they checked my hair, they checked my clothes, they checked my shoes with the I don't know what it says, just to check
Yes.
the yes, everything they checked. And I was feeling really disappointed. I was really disappointed. I told them that why? Because I'm always coming to this office like almost like every day. It's not my first time. I'm wearing the same clothes. It's just the scarf and the hijab. So it's because of I'm Muslim or because I'm wearing this hijab or I'm covering myself. And they were just watching me and didn't say anything and they were just feeling shy. You know, sometimes it gives you like, I'm grateful, but sometimes I feel like this is not fair. I'm going through from
I agree
this.
with you. I agree with you
Not
because I'm
really.
as I, you and me are the same because I'm very grateful for who or in what family or in what kind of skin I was born. But it's not fair.
Yeah, that's
It's
not
not
fair.
fair because the color of my skin or the language I speak or whatever shouldn't be the reason why people speak to me in a different way because we're all the same. We
Yeah,
no,
for
not we,
me,
no, we're not all the same. We all deserve the same respect. That's the
that's
right
true.
word.
For me, to be honest, I don't care where am I from, what kind of skin color I have. what religion I belong to. For me, just human being is important. Humanity is important. You respect, I respect. We all people in the world, we deserve respect. It doesn't matter which religion, which culture, which country you belong to.
I remember going about a year and a half ago. It was just after the October 7th events in Israel, Palestine. And I was sitting at a dinner table. We were talking about what had happened. And one of the people at the table turned to me and said to me, "I don't care if those Palestinian children get shot because anyway, they're going to grow up to be terrorists." And I stopped and I said, "I'm not going to carry on this conversation with you. And I really want you to think about the fact that you're okay with other people's children dying, because in my part, in my moral compass, your children are my children.
That's true.
Everyone's children is my children. So to me, it's got children are children. Children are children. So to me, and this doesn't only apply for children, but we're
They're
all
innocent. They don't know
yes,
anything.
but it's not even children. No one, there's no one is better than me or less or lesser than me. We all deserve the same dignity, we all deserve the same respect, and we all deserve the right to live. So to me, it's also, I told my sister, who's not as politically active as me, and she said, "But," I said, "there's no but. In the world that I live in, my moral compass says that every child in this world is my child. So I want them all to be well." Anyway, I think we all be speaking the same, but tell me, why is it different being a woman refugee?
It's
What is
because
the difference when you're a woman and you're a refugee?
the thing is that being a woman refugee is something like I mean it's really hard. I can say that coming here and because like can you explain me more like how to say what do you mean?
At them, I'll give you one example. I know that when they build a refugee camp, they forget the fact that Muslim women, more than Christian women, need privacy in their toilets. So they have to be separate toilets. You can't have all refugees using one toilet. They forget the fact that when you're in a refugee camp, you need your food and you need your water, but you also need your sanitary towels. So these little details that they forget that you have a period. So running without water or running and carrying things, and suddenly you've got your period, or suddenly, and I mean, the period is the one thing that I think they're slightly better, but it's slightly, people forget that women's bodies work differently.
Yeah, woman bodies working differently, but the thing is that I haven't faced this kind of challenges because when I came here, we have a, oh yeah, I can show you something.
But you might have faced those challenges in Qatar. Because you said you were in Qatar for a while.
Yeah, for a while
Anyway, but that was the kind of thing I was wondering if you had faced that. But tell me what else you thought about.
yeah, the thing is that there was a place that the before the it was the I mean I can say that there was different places like they can use the different restrooms for women and men. But they have changed those policies. They made the restroom like both for women and men to use it
Okay.
for all genders. And for most of I mean, people are for the women because it was really hard to go in the same restroom that they were women also using those restrooms because sometimes we are having issues. Sometimes we have to do wudu, you know. Wash ourselves and do clean our body for to pray. And it was really hard for them. Sometimes they were missing. And we have raised this problem a lot in the offices that we say that we are not feeling comfortable. We cannot use the same restroom because we have different kind of hygienes. And sometimes we don't feel like, you know, comfortable just to use the same restroom. Sometimes women, for me, going in same restaurant or meeting people, some kind of is hard, but at least I can manage. For those women who does not do, they don't want to see any woman, they're just cover any man, they're covering themselves, and they just want to be in a private space. But for them, it's really hard. They were not able to go, and they were also not able to speaking this kind of problems with the people publicly. But they were coming to us, they were sharing with us. And it was really hard that they're using the same thing.
I think the other challenge, especially for is
For women.
not only for women but for Muslims, is the fact you need a prayer space.
Yeah, prayer space they need, and also they need their own space just
Yes.
to feel respected, because they are not feeling respected. They feel apart, being in the same country and feeling the same, same people like me and other people on the country.
Tell me, wait, do you think the fact that you is language the biggest difficulty that refugees face when they land in a place and they don't speak the language? Is that the biggest challenge they face? Is
It's
it?
only more, sorry, it's not only the language that they are, it's a big challenging, it's also the transportation, the challenge of the language, the challenge of the education, the challenge of transportation, the challenging of health.
What's the transportation
The
challenge?
transportation, because they don't know the language, they don't know how to use the maps, they don't know how to use the buses, they don't know how to get into the buses. Because we had the classes, we were trying to teach them how to take bus, how to make them independent, but it was really hard for them to learn. They were not understanding. It was really, for me, even though I know the language, for me also it was hard to learn the bus, to how to take the bus, until I was just using going, and that's what I used to learn by practicing. But for them it's really hard. They don't
It's
know the
hard.
language.
I mean, it's hard for me because I grew up in South Africa, so I never used the bus. I used the car. I moved to Greece and I had a car. So to me, even to me, when I go to America or to London and I need to use the bus, it's a challenge because I
It was a
don't
real
use
challenge.
buses.
It was a real challenge. And some of the family, they didn't have phone. They didn't know how to get in there. And when they had the phone, they like sometimes I was requesting Uber for my clients, but only one of the member of the family had one phone. And rest of the family, like the children, the mom, they didn't have the phone. And it was really hard to cover. One day I just want to share something. One day I booked the Uber for one of my clients, and she didn't have the phone, and I had to call the husband, and she was in the Uber, and we put the address, and the husband left the office, and we lost her. She couldn't come to the place that she had to come. We
I
lost
laugh,
her.
but it's not something to laugh about. It's very,
Yes,
must have been
we
very
lost.
scary for her.
It was really scary because we have lost her, and we didn't know, because the Uber dropped her off in the place that we were just looking, and she went from that place, and she didn't have the phone. We were just really, really feeling desperate to how to find her. But the good thing is that when the Uber, he knew, I don't know how he felt. He came to that place, and again he took her, and he dropped her off back the place that he picked her up.
Oh, that was nice of him.
This
That was
was very
very
nice
nice
of
of
him.
him. Because it
But the
must have been very scary for her without a telephone, without language, not recognizing the place around her. Must have been very scary. Oh, that's, you
it's
see,
very
there's
scary.
some good, very, there's every now and again you get very special people in the world.
Yeah, there are good people, there are also bad people. So, I mean, not good people. Sometimes when I got here, I was one of the family or the people, they were just they were so nice to us. They were so good to us. And one day they took us to some McDonald's places, and they said, "Can we have a burger for these refugees?" And I was feeling really, really disappointed, because they shouldn't say like,
Yeah, no, it's as if they want the other person to feel sorry for you.
yeah, I feel really bad. To be, I didn't even eat the burger. I was saying that, see, they are still thinking I'm a refugee. They should say that, can I have burger for these people? Not refugees. What they do mean by meaning of refugee?
No, I agree with you. It's almost humiliating for you because it's in the context, well, I've got these people that not they're not really capable of doing it themselves, so please help them out. So I agree with you.
I was feeling really, really sad, really upset, I mean, disappointed, and then I said, it's okay. Then I came home, I cried, and then I was saying that for how long these things can be going on for us? How should I feel like I'll be like part of this community, this people? I'm also human. I can do whatever I want to do, and I can assure them that being a refugee does not mean that I'm weak. I cannot do anything, or I'm not from this country.
I agree with you. I think there's a very big label on refugee that means weak, incompetent. It's got a lot of negative connotations, and none of it isn't a word that's used positively. So
That's
we've got
right.
to try and change the narrative. Tell me, have you got any other nice stories to tell me of what's happened to refugees? Because I think there's a lot of sadness going around us, and there's a lot of challenges that we hear around us. I think we need to see some, we need to hear one or two more of the happy stories that happened to refugees, like your friend who's got picked up twice by the Uber man.
The problem is that most of my people, I can say that they are having problems with the immigration issues.
Oh, yes, that must be a
They're
challenge in
having, yeah,
America now.
it's really challenging because for the first time when we got here, we don't know how to get the attorney, how to find a job, and how to solve the problems. And it's all of the challenges is the immigration issues. It's because. It's still we have the people that they are still they haven't filed their cases, asylum cases, and it's a shortage of attorneys because if they want to work for the people, they will or might charge
A lot of
some
money.
a lot of money to find an attorney. And for them, because some of the family they are just working, like one of the member of the family is working and supporting like having 8 children or the wife. And it's really difficult for them to get to pay the fees for the attorney.
Tell me, are you also facing challenges because of ICE?
Well, because of ICE, I have been told because I haven't faced actually any issues from the ICE, but some of our friends they knocked their door and they were saying that they have warrant and they want to talk
Arrest
with them.
them.
Arrest them. And because IRC office, they have been teaching them, they have been telling them that they are not, they also have the right to not share any information if they do not have the legal warrant from the court or from the judge. But they didn't open the house and they were just scared and they were really afraid of, being arrested and sent back to Afghanistan. And they came to our office. They were saying that what should we do? We have the people came and they were asking about our information, what you suggest. So we just say that we just shared all the guideline, all the things that needs to be shared with them. We shared and yeah, so it's good. And one day we received, I don't know how it happens. Most of the people, they received a message from the government. It was saying that these people needs to be deported. They needs to like deportation. And they were really
How did they receive the telephone numbers?
they received in the emails that
And
they
how did they get email addresses?
I don't know, some kind of like official, I think officials, they send the emails like mistakenly, I think.
Okay. Well, that must be
And
very terrifying.
yeah, it was really terrifying because I remember that one of the family he one of the member of the family they received, and it was he lost all of his hopes and he was completely hiding himself in the home, and he was afraid and he was really crying. He said that how can I, if I go back to my home country, then I will be killed by the Taliban, and then I made my life, I made my hope, I built my career, how I got married, I have my wife. His wife had green card, but his case was under process, and he was completely like terrified. And then maybe the next within like 2 days or the next day, we heard that it's just like happened like mistakenly.
I think the scary part is that there is the possibility of that happening
Yeah, it'll be good.
because of the change of the policy of the Trump administration. It's
Yes.
scary because it's possible that this wasn't a scam or a mistake or whatever.
Yeah.
It could have been. Okay. I do like to finish on positive stories, but on the other hand, I do think being a refugee must be challenging. And I do think being a refugee without a non-asylum status and a resident status must be doubly difficult. because of not only because of the Trump administration, because of the world has gone crazy.
The world has also gone crazy, but the thing is that I'm sh sharing my own experience about my family because we have applied asylum for my parents, and it's a long time that they haven't received the approval yet. And for them, because if they don't have asylum, they were not able to receive the government benefits. They were out of the benefits, and then we were also not they were also not able to travel to outside the United States for the like some of the treatment, or they need something. So it's really challenging for them, and it's really taking a long time. It's now more than a 4 years that they're still they're being not in a status or does not have a status. It's something it keeps you worry. It
Yes.
makes it gives you the feeling like having home, but you still feel like homeless.
Yes. It
Like
gives you a
if you
feeling of insecurity because you have no security
insecurity
of
and
where your
those.
home is.
Yeah, and this insecurity slowly kills you. That's how you go in deep depression,
I know, I know. I
and
cannot
it kills
imagine
you.
because I've been fortunate, but it must be horrible to not know that you're safe.
Yeah, we are so because you're in a place that you feel like you will be sent back. If you didn't get approval, what will happen? They will send you back, or you will not practice those rights that you have to practice. You cannot use those, and
Are
then you.
you in the Utah just with your parents or your siblings also with you?
Yeah, I'm living with my parents and siblings. With my, I live with my mom and dad, and with my twin sister, and most of my other sisters. They're married. They're living in their homes, but we all are together in the same place.
And is it only your parents that haven't have a challenge with their status, with their
Yes.
applications? Okay.
Yes. They are having
And your father is not well.
My father, he's not well. He's not doing great, and he was really ha having hard time to participate in the interview for the asylum because of the sickness that he's going through. And then we have requested the USCIS office that he will not be able to join, and we had the paper, but they say that if he's not joining the interview, so that might be a problem. At least we should have him in the interview, even if he's not speaking.
I must admit, understand the logic
Yeah.
because they need to see the person. They need to see that this person actually exists. Does your father speak English?
No, he does not speak English.
But I can understand, even though I know it must be hard for you and him, I can
Yeah.
understand why they would want the documents of why he can't speak, but they need to see his face. They need
Yeah, it's
his face.
true.
All I can say is I wish you luck and strength to inch make sure and to get the end of the road with your parents and them
Thank you.
getting official status in
I
the
hope so.
US.
I'm hopeful.
We have to be hopeful. If we have no hope, life is over.
Life
And
is always a struggle, dear Magna, because I have been struggling a lot in Afghanistan, being as a woman and living there, because from when I was working at the office, working among the people, among the men. And then when I was driving over there, they were just making fun of me. I was facing like bomb blasters, not feeling secure in my own country. And then life is always challenges. So what I can feel like, if you're alive, you shouldn't be give up. You
Yeah,
because
exactly. You
you
must
should
carry
never.
on.
Yeah, just carry on. Just do what you want. Just prove yourself. Never ever get hopeless, because I do believe that nothing will be the same in the same situation. All these things are changing. All the things are going to get well, going to get good. So always fight. Never stop fighting. If you fight, then you will win. I'm not
Well,
losing. I can
I
fight.
agree with you. And if you don't fight, you've lost.
You're lost.
If
You're
you
lost.
fight, and it doesn't work out, at least you've had the fight and you've moved a step forward. But if you
At least
don't
you
fight,
have the feelings that okay,
I
if I
did what
might
I
be,
could.
I could do. At least you feel proud by yourself that you can do. You did it. You did it. Even if you didn't get it, but you did it. You're satisfied that what you
You did
did.
your best. You did your
Yeah, I did
best.
my best. I tried my best. Even I heard that I was applying for something in my life, and when I spoke with my with the office, I said that I want to apply for this, and they said that you're not allowed to, I mean, you're not eligible to apply for this. Then I said, it's okay. If I'm eligible, if I'm not eligible, I will apply. I will see it. You always try the chances. You can try. You can try all the chances.
I agree
What
with
if
you.
you get? And then finally, I got that chance. I was so happy. I was never expected that I will get the chance, but I got it. So what I say, always try, always try.
Yes, I agree with you. Because firstly, no one's going to try for you. So unless you try for yourself, that's your only possibility of possibly succeeding. And what was it? I think Nelson Mandela said, you might fall down 7 times, but you've got to get up 8 times. So no matter how many times you fall, you've got to get up
Oh,
and
but you
try
have to,
again. And it's not possible. It's impossible until it's possible. So carry on. Never believe people that tell you it's impossible, because someday it might be possible. Okay.
That's why my dad, he says that you are not only a girl, you're a boy. You can do it. And he does not call me my daughter, he calls me my son, Bachim. He calls me
Okay.
Bachim. So that's why I didn't, because my brothers, I didn't have brother at that time, and he was also calling me Bachim, and then I have my brother, but it's still I have the feeling of like I'm the man. I can work outside, I can work inside. I do feel like both of them.
Okay. It sounds like you've got a wonderful father, and it sounds like you've got a good relationship with your dad. You're very blessed. We are.
I remember that send, it was really hard for her, for him just to send us an outside of the country and receive the getting the education without a mahram, without a meal.
Oh.
And he was accepting all of those challenges. He was accepting hearing from the people, but he said, no, go, it's okay. It's temporary, daughter. You can go do. I want you to be you.
Yes, the best you can
He
be.
I remember he said that if you he said when I was leaving my home, going to India for education, he just took my hand. He said that, my daughter, this is you. If you take your, is that, you know, like your dignity like this, you will be win if you do. And if you leave it, you will lose it. So it's all you.
No, I
I can
agree.
support you,
I
but
like
if,
your father. I want to meet your father, because that's true. Because you carry
yeah.
your dignity. No one can take your dignity away from you. You've got it. No, let's put it this way. You can hold, how long you hold onto your dignity depends on you, in most
Yeah,
cases.
that's why when I did my education, when I came back to home, I was trying to share my experiences with women, with girls, with my friends, with everybody. I was telling them, I was giving like, positive vibes, say that you can do, you can do, you can do. It's okay.
Okay, so Hatima, that's how you pronounce your name. The
Yeah.
KH is Hatima. I'm really honored that you shared your personal story with me, because I think it's the personal stories that make the difference, because it's not all just theory. All I can say is carry on, get up every time. And I really think we all need to be reminded of how difficult it is to be a Muslim, or not a Muslim, a refugee. And to be different as a
Bit
refugee,
to be
because
different
it's,
from here.
and let's hope the balance of the world changes, because it's very sad to see how many wars are around, how many people are made refugees, how few people that not all those refugees actually rebuild their lives. Let's see if we can help the world find its humanity again.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Is there anything else you want to say before we close?
Yeah, I just want to share about my mom experience. I'm calling, she introduced you to me, Miss Marzia. So I
Marcia is a lovely woman, so
so
smart.
she's my symbol. She's the person that made me like, to fight more. And I wanted to bring this because I really want the best for her, because I remember that when I was in the Pakistan, it was in 1992, there was a Taliban. We went to Pakistan to do education, and she made this school. It's called Manuchehre.
Oh yes, she
And
did a school for she carried
for
on.
she made a school for Afghan refugees, and
Yes, yes.
she made it that for free for everybody. Like, it was for all the girls, all the people, they just want to go get education. She made it that, and it was really amazing. I did my schooling over there.
Oh, wow. Because
And
she
she.
speaks about it with so much pride, and it's so much part of her. So we have here one graduate from that wonderful school she created in Pakistan.
Yeah, she created, and it was really amazing because we didn't have a school in Pakistan for, especially for Afghan refugees, and she created that. And because I was so lucky because my mom and dad, everybody have, we had family relation with her, and she said, "Oh, I have a school," and then she was explaining, and we went to her school. To be honest, I was really surprised. I was kid, but I remember because one of her sisters, she was my teacher. But I really love her. I was afraid of her because she was so strict. She wanted everybody to learn.
No, but that's the way it should be. But she, when I
Yeah.
interviewed her, and I just picked up online. She was speaking to someone else, and I thought to myself, she's so focused, and she knows exactly what she needs to do and what needs to be done to get things done. She's a
Because I
wonderful,
mean,
inspiring human being.
she is because I know she, because the pain that she was going through, she didn't want us to go from that pain. And
Exactly.
I believe that I did my schooling from there, and they were teaching me really hard, and I was learning things so good. I was feeling really connected, feeling so happy. And then when, even when I came in Afghanistan back, and then I went to do my education, I did my bachelor from India, and then I was having a hard time going to my for my master's. And I just call her and I said, "Mom, I want to do my master's." And my parents, they said that you did your bachelor, you can come take a break and then go back because having I got success in the master's exam. And my mom said, "No, I'm not allowing you to go because you take break and then go." I said, "No, chances are not coming. If I take a break, if I lose the chance, I may not have the my master's, maybe not have the same chance." And I called my mom, Miss Mercy. I call her, "Mom, what to do? You're my sample. My mom will listen to you. She is not listening to me." And she had to call my parents, and she explained everything to my mom and dad and everybody, and say, "She has to get, she has to go. She has to go because she might not get the chance. If she is interested, it's okay. It's just 2 years, she can go." And she was the hope of myself. She's always saying that my daughter, if it's not only one Marzia, it's me. Like I'm Marzia. I can be Marzia. So I can work for the woman that as she does for everybody. And then I did my education, my master's, and I was working for the people, for the woman because of her. And she did really incredible job. And you know, she's the just positive symbol.
She's a lot. She's really a lovely human being, and as I said, so impressive about how focused and passionate she is, and she just walks the talk. She's really,
She
really
always
impressive.
introduced me to women, with the social activists, with the other people, just to be with them, to learn from them, and to work with them, because she knows that I have the ability, I can do, I can work. So she always encouraging me. She always supports me in everything. I really love her.
But can I tell you something, Khatima?
Sure.
When you acknowledge the people that have helped you in your life, you go further. I think
Yeah.
when you give gratitude back, it takes you further forward. I did my master's in international law. That's my focus. And I had a wonderful professor that was supervising me. And it turned out he ultimately became the special representative for the occupied territories,
Oh,
Palestinian
great.
territories. And I was always, I mean, I'm quite old, and I'm only saying I'm old because when I was doing international law and international relations, it wasn't such a big thing. We're talking about the 80s, so the world was not that was very big. And I always say that he was so inspiring, and he so brought out my passion that he inspired me to carry on studying. And I sent him a, and carry on being the person I was because I'm very interested in the global community. And I
That's
sent
true.
him a letter about 15 years ago. I found him online. And I studied in 1980. And I
1989.
sent him a letter in 2011. I find he's
Oh.
teaching at a university in Belgium now, to thank him. And he said to me, I said, I thank you for inspiring me in my life. He says to me, you know what? For a student to come back 30 years later to
Yeah.
tell me thank you, it's very rare. And thank you for thanking me.
Yeah,
And I
for
feel
that.
that the minute you thank the people that have helped you along, I think you feel better.
Yeah.
You feel better.
That's why she's the path for me. She's the path for me that she guided me and she left me. She said, "This is the way. you go, and I'm sure you will get success.
Anyway,
So,
so together we'll give a big thank you to
yeah,
our friend
absolutely.
Marzia, because I do think I think you must be one of the few people she's inspired, because she does
She's
it
inspiring.
collectively. She does it for you. It's something she picks up, what you call it? She sees where she can be of help, and she just does it. So thank the universe for people like Marzia.
Thank you. We do have good people around and see.
Yes, we do. We do have
Yeah.
angels around us that help us along.
That's
I
true.
thank you for sharing your story with us, and with sharing the story of a lot of the Afghan refugees. I thank you for coming here and speaking with us. I thank the listeners for listening. I want all of us to be safe. I want your parents to get their application approved, inshallah.
Inshallah. Thank you so much for having me had the conversation with you and giving me the chance like to talk with the people and with you. And then I really appreciate and thank you so much for the work you do for everybody in your
I thank
grade.
you. I thank you for speaking to me so personally, which to me it's the most important thing, because sometimes stories are just when you're just telling theory, it doesn't mean a lot. But when you put a personal slant on it, or you give the personal side of that story, it's a lot more effective. So I
Yeah,
thank you. And
it's not only a story, it's the reality.
no, but
It's the
that's
reality
what I'm
of
saying. When you give your reality, it's no longer just a theoretical story, it's a fact.
yeah.
Okay. So thank
Thank
you,
you. Thank you
Fatima,
so
and
much.
stay safe.
I wish you have a great night.
And you too.
You too. Bye-bye.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.